Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 83 of Slamfire Radio for November 14th. I'm your host, Owen Flewelling.
I'm another host.
No, Matt, you did it wrong. Matt. The guy who's next week's lead host goes.
Yes! Yes! It's not just me that screws it up.
And I thought after last week we would get it right.
Did your vein start going yet in your forehead? I love it when that happens.
Man. So who are you? Interrupt me in the intro. That's amazing.
Hey, I heard silence, and so I jumped in. If there's silence, I go.
I was having a dream last night, and right in the middle of it, Matthew. It just popped in there. Like, no, no. It's time to dream about rim fires. Disgusting. I'm the hit the go button for latte.
Oh, you hit that early too. Thank you. That was fun.
Hate you.
Oh boy. This is great. I feel vindicated now for some reason.
Well, don't.
All right.
Maybe next week, guys. I doubt it.
It'd be such a letdown for the listeners.
I know. They'd be like, oh, they got it right. Oh, that sucks. I'm not listening to this anymore.
I'm going to get out my crayons. I'm going to draw a picture. There's going to be a Venn diagram. Lead host. Next week's lead host. Third week's lead host, in that order. Why can't we do that? I don't understand.
I don't understand the question.
Oh, heavens. Owen, carry on. Please get us, move us
okay.
Forward.
We are going to move forward now, and Trevor, please tell us. No, you're going last, aren't you?
Yes.
Matthew.
Yes.
Please regale us with what you did with guns this week.
Sure. It's not about rimfire this week.
Boring. So, oh, wait. He says not. Sorry.
Not about rimfire. It's about shotguns.
You're not boring us.
Yeah, you're boring us. So I talked last week a little bit about the fact that I ordered a new shotgun, and it's arrived, and it's pretty cool. It's a Warrior, made in Turkey, like Trevor said, so it must suck, but it doesn't.
When did I say that?
That last week. You're like, oh, it's made in Turkey. Remember that?
Yeah, because, yeah.
Yeah, you remember that. But it doesn't suck. It's not perfect, but like I said on last week's show, too, I like guns that don't come perfect, so I get to tweak them, and I got to tweak this one. So I've got a video out on it, so you can watch that for all the explicit details, if you will. But overall, it's a really lightweight, really cool, really short, and very compact because it folds right in half. Which is really cool. It fits in my Marlin Papoose bag. So you guys may remember that I have my Marlin Papoose actually in a full-size 7.95 stock, so I don't put it in its carry bag anymore. So I now have this in that carry bag, along with a machete, along with a box of shells. And when it comes, I'll have a box of 22 ammo in there, along with my 22 insert for the gun, too. But I'll talk about that more when it arrives. That'll be a couple of weeks, because it's coming from the States. But I had it out today with my buddy Matt. We shot some clays with it. It shoots really well, points really well, comes with chokes. Interesting thing about the chokes, they're not what I would call high-end, especially due to the fact that I had to take a pick and pick parts of, you know, how they put notches in chokes so that you can use the choke tool to thread it in and thread it out. Well, some of the material from the notching process was still in the choke tube, so I had to kind of scrape that out. So that wasn't exactly high end, but like I said, it was less than $200 brand new, so I'm not really complaining. I really enjoy it. I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. Check out my video if you want to hear more information on that. And I do have to give a huge shout out to Martin at Corwin Arms. That's where I got this, at Corwin Arms out in British Columbia. The gun comes with a plastic bead, which sucks. because I'm going to have this on the front of my four-wheeler going through dense brush, and I know the first brush that I go through, it's going to knock that bead right off. It's just going to snap it off. I know it will. It's just, it's plastic. And so I sent an email to Martin, and I said, you know, I'd like to get another bead for this, a brass bead. Can you tell me the thread size? We went back and forth a little bit to clarify some stuff, and eventually it just came down to he's just sending me one for free in the mail. So here's a brass bead for you, man. That'll solve your problem. So, beauty. Lots of good customer service from Corwin Arms there out in BC, so thank you to Martin for sure, 100%. Other than that, though, like I said, just out shooting some clays with it. I have the full choke in it right now, and just disintegrating clays. You'll see on the video, the clay that I shoot just turns to dust. There's just nothing left of it, and I did that several times. Just, I had a really good time out shooting clays. I did also go hunting earlier this morning. I was out, I got up early at 9:30 in the morning. Weird, huh? And a lot of guys are going, that's early? For me it is, so shut your pie holes. I was out and saw a spruce grouse. I haven't seen a spruce grouse up here in quite a while, and so I was, okay, there's a spruce grouse. He was standing on the side of the road, standing up super tall, had his head way up there. Perfect shotgun shot because I could hit him in the head without damaging any of the meat for sure. But I was sitting there contemplating, do I shoot or don't I shoot? Because I don't really like spruce grouse. I like gruffed grouse, but spruce grouse does have a stronger flavor to it that I don't 100% enjoy. But I do still enjoy it. And so it came down to, okay, fine. I'll take him and I'll eat him anyway. So I pull the trigger, and click. The gun doesn't go off. I'm like, what? I did load this, right? So I open it up, and yeah, there's a shell in there, and there's a dent on the primer. Good dent. Oh, whatever. Maybe, you know, it's like rimfire. You spin it around, maybe it'll go off a second time. So I spin the shell in the chamber and close the action again and cock the hammer and click. And the bird's just standing there. I'm like, wow. Isn't today just your lucky day? So I open the action up and I take the shell out and I put it in my pocket, fish out another shell, stick it in, close the action, and the bird flies away. So thanks to my hesitation for not sure if I wanted a spruce grouse or not, and then the luck of the draw, he managed to get the only dud in the pack because I fired off the rest of that pack that day, or today, just to make sure that it wasn't a problem with the gun, and every other shell that I fired so far through it, 100%, no problem. It was just that one was a dud, so yeah, lucky bird. So later on that day, went and met up with Matt, and he and I went out hunting, and we got typical results. We saw absolutely zilch, so we stopped and shot more clays. So we took turns throwing them and shooting them, and unfortunately, the only shells I had with me in the truck was a box of hunting shells, so we went through an entire box of hunting shells instead of target shells shooting clays, but we still had fun. We blasted them pretty good, and the very last clay, I had the it was funny. We had the perfect amount of shells for the number of clays that I had. So Matt threw the last clay, and of course, the last clay. You gotta hit the last clay. Well, of course, I missed. So Matt, the clay landed just perfectly. We were in a gravel pit on the berm of the gravel pit, just laying there about 50 yards away, blazing in the sunlight, bright orange. And it's just sitting there taunting me. And Matt's like, you got your 22 in the truck, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, good. So we got that out and we blasted it with the 22 instead. So, but yeah, we had a good time. Lots of fun out hunting, lots of fun playing with the shotgun, and even a little bit of rimfire going on there. So, cool. Had a good day today. Owen, what'd you get up to?
Well, as people may remember from last week, I talked about my M305 that I've kind of monkeyed around with. And so the next day, I think it was the next day, I went to took it to the range to sight it in, and had a little bit of an issue with getting it sighted in. I had it cranked down as far as the scope would go, and I was still shooting 4 or 5 inches high.
What distance?
50 yards.
Okay, so you have, it's quite the height over bore you have with that gun then.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I understand that then.
So I got that as kind of as close as I could, and was like, well, it was a Friday. I wanted to go hunting on Saturday. So I said, well, I'll just Kentucky windage it if I see anything. Yep. So I ended up going hunting on Saturday. Didn't see anything. I saw a bear. And a bunch of grouse, but of course I didn't have a shotgun. Could have had two or three, probably, but didn't have a shotgun.
Headshot them, you know?
Yeah, maybe not.
All right.
That's an expensive grouse if you're shooting 308 at it.
True.
Yeah, so anyway, I didn't see anything. Saw a bear. It came out and looked at me for a while and went back in the woods. So I said, well, kind of had enough of that. So I... wait a minute. I'm trying to think now. Let me see. That was Saturday. What day did I sight that in again? Anyway, I decided I was going to get this straightened out. So I thought, well, I will put basically shim the scope in the rings.
Yep. You can do that.
Yep.
So you just use like a pop can. You cut the pop can apart and.
Well, yeah, I went a little heavier duty than that.
Oh, okay.
I was like, well, I could use some other soft metal. I have some brass sheeting here. In the
shop. Okay, that would work.
I thought it was 18 gauge, but it might be a little heavier than 18 gauge. I think it might be 16 gauge. It's pretty heavy, really, mm-hmm. for that sort of application. So I cut a little piece, and I messed around. I finally got it in there and just barely got the ring started on and tightened down. Get it all tightened down and figure out with it. Go out, get all set up, just out in the back here, and fire off, set up a target. 50 yards, pace it off. First shot, nothing on the paper. Okay, second shot, nothing on the paper. And I mean, we're not talking a piece of paper, it's a big piece of cardboard.
Right.
I'm like, man, what's going on? So I shoot high and couldn't see anything. So I was like, well, maybe I'll shoot a little low. Maybe I've done this so far that I can't even see it. So I shot low just to kind of figure out which direction I was going in, and the snow kicks up in front of the target. Huh. Like, oh, I shimmed the wrong ring. So that was kind of a bit of a facepalm moment, realizing I'd gone the other way. I was like 2 feet off now.
Right.
So back into the shop I go and take that all apart, put it under the front ring instead of the back ring, back out. And dialed it in and shot a nice little, probably a 1-inch group without even really trying at 50 with it. So
it's dead on at 50 now.
So it's dead on at 50.
That's good. That's what you're kind of hoping for.
That's what I wanted. Yeah.
Yeah, because we did the trajectory there to figure out you're good out to what, 260 now, right?
With 260. Yeah, 260 at zeros again.
Yeah.
And I would have another probably, I don't know, 10 to 15 yards, I think, before it really starts to drop off significantly. So
yeah, you're almost out to 300. Almost.
Almost out to 300. I could probably do a little Kentucky windage and make 300 work.
Yeah.
You know, on the fly for hunting purposes. So. It was pretty cool hunting with a scope. I've never hunted with a scope before, with a gun with a scope on it. So,
you're so weird.
I know. So to sit in a spot and be able to put my gun up and look through the scope and go, oh, I can actually see what's on the other side of the field if something walked out.
you're not supposed to use your scope as binoculars.
Yes, I know. But I don't have binoculars with me, so yeah.
So as long as you're not using it to see if it's a person, then you're okay,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
You don't want to use your scope to see who the person is. That's the no-no. Is that the RCMP or just the town police coming after me?
Yeah. So anyway, that was kind of neat. It's a heavy gun. I did not enjoy lugging it around.
So not the gun for me is what you're saying.
Not the gun for you. No, unless you were to pull it on like a sled or something.
Right. And that's an option. I could do that.
But it was nice once it was set up with a big bipod on it. It just kind of sit there, and it's just the perfect height for sitting. And no, it was fun. It was nice to get it shooting right on. So that's about all I did.
Cool.
So Trevor,
I'm going to use my time to talk about a comparison and contrast between the M&P9 and the Glock 17. A couple of listeners requested this when they heard that I had the Glock 17 and an M&P. It was actually King Kowalski's idea, and then Bolivar wanted to hear my opinions because he had considered a Glock and went with an M&P. So first things first, I've got it divided into categories, and I've got talking points so that I can stay organized and move through this quickly. First is size. The M&P is shorter. Approximately 7 millimeters shorter than the Glock as far as barrel length and slide is concerned. And although the M&P is shorter, because of the placement of the sights on the slide, it actually has a longer sight radius than the Glock.
Oh, that's a bonus.
Yeah, so here you are with a shorter, more compact gun, but a longer sight radius because they made the most use of the space on the slide and were able to increase the sight radius to a few millimeters more than the Glock. When it comes to width, however, the Glock slide is narrower than the M&P. So the M&P kind of looks short and stubby. Not really, because we're talking millimeters, but anyway. The grips, however, are the same length. And when it comes to concealability, grip length is more important than slide length. So you're going to have the same amount of grip sticking out from your waistband holster or your outside the waistband holster. As far as aesthetics are concerned, the M&P wins hands down. The Glock looks like a brick. I find the M&P is, they're both black, chunky, polymer pistols, but the M&P does have nicer lines on the outside if aesthetics and appearance matters to you. I know some people, it's one of the reasons they don't like the Glock, is they say that it's chunky and square. And Officer Frank, actually, when he was here the other day, said that he prefers the look of the Glock over the M&P. So to each their own, beauties in the eye and all too. That stuff.
Me too.
Yeah, you find the Glock
lines. I prefer the Glock. Yeah. But maybe it's just what I'm used to as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the lines better on the M&P. They've taken some craftsmanship, if you will, and the serrations on the slide are a little nicer, etc. So, ergonomics. Both guns were compared using the smallest back strap, so that I could kind of compare apples to apples. The grip angles, however, are different. The M&P has a traditional grip angle like you would find on a 1911, for example, similar to that 17 degree grip angle. So if you're more accustomed to a straight or 1911 style grip, you may find the M&P more comfortable in your hand than the Glock, because the Glock, traditionally, the grip angle is compared to a revolver. Grip shape, much rounder and more contoured on the M&P than the Glock, where the Glock feels like a rectangle in your hand. They've taken off all the corners on the M&P grip.
That's one thing I notice whenever I've ever handled an M&P. Anytime I do, it's like, oh, this is so comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And the back strap on the Glock just gives you a fatter rectangle in your hand.
Right.
The M&P just gives you – the M&P grip is rounded in two directions, on the sides and on the back, when you increase the size of the grip.
It increases the width, too. That's good.
It does, yeah.
Yep.
Good, unless you have hobbit thumbs, which I do.
Right.
So I'm kind of at a disadvantage for shooting handguns. I have a medium to large size hand, but a ridiculously small thumb. It makes no sense. I've got small feet, small thumbs. I'm a bit of an anomaly. So I need a big grip, but then I need to put an extended magazine release on, or I cannot get the mag out of the gun without breaking my grip to get to the mag release. A Gen 3 Glock with a standard magazine release is a chore for me. The M&P with the smallest back strap has a much more pronounced beaver tail than the Glock. The Gen 4 Glocks now come with extended beaver tails that can be added to the gun. The first 10,000 Gen 4 Glocks that came out had two back straps, a small and a medium and a large, and they didn't add any additional beaver tail. The new ones now do. But if you're just comparing the small grip on the M&P to the small grip on the Glock, the M&P is a much better beaver tail, and you kind of feel like you can get your hand up in the gun a bit more. Function. The mag button on the M&P is easier for me to reach with the smallest back strap installed, but it makes it harder for me to maintain a consistent grip while shooting. The grip is almost too small. Yes, I can reach the magazine release, but when shooting, the gun finds some gaps in my hand to wiggle its way into, causing me to readjust my grip between shots, where I don't have to do that on the Glock. And of course, the Gen 4 magazine button is larger than on the Gen 3, and so I can hold the gun comfortably with the small back strap, not readjust my grip while shooting, and reach the magazine release. So form and function in that regard, the win goes to the Glock. Extended magazine buttons, magazine release buttons, are available for both guns. So if it's an issue for you, you've got availability of some aftermarket parts and factory extended release parts as well. Although the magazine release is reversible on the Glock, the slide lock is not. So M&P wins in this little category because not only is the M&P magazine release reversible, it comes with an Ambi slide lock right out of the box.
That's nice. So,
yeah. And of course, neither of these pistols has a thumb release, which is, or a thumb safety, which is also nice.
That's right.
They're of course both polymer and both striker fired, but I think that goes without saying. Neither
Too
model.
Too late. You just said it.
Neither model comes with a magazine disconnect. However, some M&P 9s do come with a magazine disconnect. It just so happens the one I have does not, and it actually says it right on the side. Caution, capable of firing with magazine removed. So I'm sure if our military or if our police were to look at it, the RCMP that is, they would want that reinstalled because that's a safety feature they currently have.
Yep.
Both have loaded chamber indicators. However, the Glock's is much better because it's not only visual, it is tactile, and tactile is important if you're somewhere in the dark and would like to know if you're picking up a loaded gun. The M&P loaded indicator is simply a hole in between the chamber and the slide that you can see a piece of shiny brass in, but you need light to see that. So the Glock loaded chamber indicator is better. Both have railed dust covers molded into the polymer frame. The M&P has three grooves where the Glock only has one. So depending on what accessory you're putting on there, you may benefit from the extra grooves.
Can you mount a scope?
Yes.
How about a bayonet?
Of course. Construction. The Glock wins hands down for ease of disassembly and reassembly because it has much fewer parts and requires no tools to disassemble. The M&P, however, the pins need to be drifted out with a punch. You're not taking this thing apart with one hand. I don't care who you are.
Unless you're like Edward Punch Hands.
Possibly. And then you'd have to be Edward Left Hammer and Right.
I like it. That's hilarious.
There is... not only do the pins in the frame need to be removed on the M&P, the extractor is also held in place with a pin in the frame. None of these things are an issue with the Glock. The Glock was designed to be completely, completely disassembled with that Glock tool, and that Glock tool is simply a punch. Although they're both polymer frames, the M&P has solved a problem that still exists in the Glock polymer frame. The Glock polymer frame flexes when you press the trigger. Your trigger bar actually pushes up against your frame, causes flex in the frame, and gives you a bit of a mushy trigger feel. There have been improvements throughout the generations, but M&P took it to the next step and actually installed two steel inserts, one which actually goes right through the frame that they have inscribed the serial number on, and the other one is on the inside. You can't tell it's there until you disassemble the frame. So they've stiffened the frame right above the magazine well with two steel inserts, and this helps to make the trigger feel better because it's not flexing the frame. The bow in the trigger or in the trigger bar is not pushing on the polymer frame. So that I think is a significant improvement over the Glock. Trigger characteristics of both of these firearms. The trigger safety on the Glock is better than that on the M&P. The M&P trigger safety is part of the entire trigger bow or trigger shoe itself. So unlike the Glock, where the center of the trigger has to be hit before the entire trigger can be depressed, if you hit any part of the M&P trigger, it will depress the trigger safety, which I believe defeats the purpose of a trigger safety.
I agree with you 100% there. That makes absolutely no sense to me. If you can still pull the trigger improperly without having your finger on it correctly, then what's this point of even having it? You're still just pulling a trigger.
Pointless.
Yep.
I
think they did it the way they did is to avoid patent infringement.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think
does Savage pay Glock every time they put an AccuTrigger on a gun?
I think that's a different. Safety. That's a completely different setup, though.
It's a trigger safety. The reason you can have a light trigger on a Savage rifle is because you can't pull the trigger without. And as a matter of fact, if you try and pull a Savage rifle trigger without first disengaging the AccuTrigger, the trigger locks up and then you have to recycle your bolt.
Yep.
So now, as far as ergonomics on the triggers go, the trigger shoe is more ergonomic on the M&P than the Glock. It's rounded, feels more comfortable around your finger, similar to the trigger on a Tanfoglio, let's say. The trigger reach on the M&P is slightly longer than that on the Glock, so depending on the size of your hand, the length of your fingers, you may have to get up there to get around the front of the trigger. I find it in a comfortable location, but your mileage may vary. the trigger reset on the Glock is shorter and more pronounced. That's been a common complaint with the M&P, is that when doing a trigger reset drill, it's difficult to find your reset. It's definitely a combat or duty style trigger with a long reset, so you're going to train with this gun to release it all the way out to the end of its travel and then repress it. If you want to shorten the trigger reset on this, you're going to have to go to an Apex trigger kit. The trigger pull is better. It's less mushy on the M&P. So the reset is better on the Glock, and the reset is shorter on the Glock, but the pull is mushier on the Glock than it is on the M&P. So depending on what you like in a trigger feel, you may prefer one or the other. I mean, you've got some good characteristics in both. Sights. Both of these guns have, my Glock doesn't, but the M&P has factory sights. There's a slight advantage over the Glock sights in that they're all metal, three painted white dots. Now, if you look at a factory Glock sight, they're plastic, and the front one's held on with a screw, and that front dot doesn't even fit into the rear notch, and then you're lining up a white dot with a white U.
That's the most frustrating sight system invented, yeah, in my opinion, especially because that dot does not fit in the notch.
That's my complaint about it. I can live with the white U, but the dot not fitting in the notch, being too high, it's just not,
drives
it's
me
not
bonkers.
Good. It goes against what we're taught about lining up the back with the front.
That's right. You're supposed to line things up, and if you have something where you can only see half of it, naturally you're going to pull it to the point where you can see the whole thing, and now your front sight's higher than your rear sight.
Mm-hmm. Which goes against what we're taught.
Yep.
Shootability. The bore axis is slightly higher on the M&P. And it recoils more than the Glock does, because of the new dual recoil system on a Glock. I think I took out my tungsten guide rod to keep things fair, and I went to the Glock factory recoil spring. And so the Glock having a lower bore axis, the Glock having that dual recoil spring, I think attributes to the fact that there's less perceived recoil and less muzzle flip in the Glock than there is in the M&P. The difference between the two is negligible, but I would say that the M&P does recoil more and has more muzzle flip. Both of these firearms are as reliable as you could ever hope for in a duty pistol or a carry pistol. This particular M&P that I have, I knew its previous owner, I shot it, and I watched this gun eat ammo in a match that my Tanfoglio would not eat. It was too long for my Tanfoglio, so Pierre-Luc gave me his M&P ammo, took my Tanfoglio ammo, and after that, neither one of us had any hiccups. I went to his short ammo, he went to my long ammo, and the M&P ate it like a pig. It should be noted that the tolerances on the M&P, and have you seen that video yet, Matthew?
There's
a tremendous amount of slop in the slide and frame of the M&P, and I don't know if they're all created equal, and they all have all of this slop, and I will say it is a tremendous amount of slop. Which, of course, is going to lead to its reliability. But some will argue that it will also affect its accuracy. That being said, I posted pictures on my Facebook of the groups I shot with these two guns. It was cold, and I was standing in the snow, so I wasn't being super-duper precise in taking my time. But I did shoot 30 rounds out of each pistol from 7 meters twice. I shot two sets of targets. And then I shot one 5-meter group of 30 rounds with the M&P. And what size would you say that was, Matthew? Like just under 2 inches, maybe?
Yeah, it was not very big.
But all in one hole.
Yeah, it was a ragged hole. Yeah, it was fantastic shooting.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was done. So, anyway. that's as Forrest Gump would say, that's really all I have to say about that.
So, is there a nod one way or another? Would you give the nod to the Glock or to the M&P, or is it almost a draw?
For me, the nod still goes to the Glock, because I prefer the feel of the Glock's trigger, and I prefer the ergonomics of the Glock. For me, I can handle the controls on the gun out of the box without having to buy any. I don't have to mess with the backstrap. I don't have to replace the magazine release. And I know the M&P parts are out there, but personally I can source Glock parts a lot faster because I've already done the research, so it's what I'm accustomed to. And some of you have seen, I've disassembled two Glocks, detailed strip, with my eyes closed, blindfolded. I could never do that with the M&P. And the ease of assembly and disassembly and maintaining my own firearms is a high priority for me. I want to do my own work, and I want that work to be simple. The M&P is not a simple platform to work on. It's easy once you know how to do it, but I tried to figure out how to do it on my own, and I spent a long, long time figuring it out before I finally gave in and went to YouTube to get some help.
Gotcha.
Cool. I was shown a 2-minute tutorial on how to do a Glock and came home and made a video myself that night.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Glocks are definitely the more simple of the two.
Yeah. One neat thing about the trigger on the M&P is it's like a double action trigger where it stays in the middle of the guard and you can just keep pressing it and pressing it unless you rack it. And when you rack it and you fire it, it still returns to the middle of the guard and you use the trigger spring. So you can dry fire with the M&P and have a real night. Well, you can have a spring loaded trigger pull the whole time. Or with the Glock, once you fire it, the trigger goes to the back and it stays at the back.
Yep.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thanks. I'm sure our listeners enjoy that too.
It was kind of quick. If anybody has any questions, email the show or Facebook me.
Okay, now moving on to some listener feedback. We've got quite a bit. This is kind of our main topic for the show tonight. And we've got, a long list. I don't even know how many emails we have here. So we're going to get right at it.
It's a dozen teen.
A dozen main teen?
Topics. A dozen teen, yeah.
A main topic's worth of emails, if you will.
Exactly.
As it were.
As it were. So to speak.
I concur.
Okay, you concur. I'm going to read the first one.
Okay.
Just because
I concur with that as well.
Yeah, I concur. Yeah, carry on.
Why, is there big words in this one?
There might be.
And a lot of them. Howdy day.
All right. Okay, so this is a letter that some guy named Ross.
Rossinator, come on.
Some guy named Ross, whatever.
Sent to his MP. And so as a comment says, here's how a letter should sound. Obviously not any letter that I would write, but the Honorable Michelle Rempel, Minister of State, Western Economic Diversification, MP, Calgary Centre North. Dear Michelle, in the wake of two recent terrorist attacks, the Government of Canada has taken steps that I cannot agree with. Number one, shelving of Bill C-42. This bill was a small step in addressing the debacle known as C-68. Despite the Prime Minister's assertions that we will not be intimidated, he was cowed quickly. A previous note from your office, Bill C-42, was identified as addressing my concerns. As this is no more, what is the way forward? Previously emailed comments regarding how my Swiss Arms rifle had become a $4,000 paperweight via RCMP actions. Even with the changes made by Minister Blaney, he had to throw some French
it's
in there.
French.
Didn't he? The raison d'être? I don't know.
Close enough.
The reason for spending that money still has not been met. I cannot take it hunting. Is there a timetable for getting this corrected? The rifle returned to its non-restricted category. Number two, Bill C-44. This proposed law is very disappointing. More spying on Canadians is not what we need. Violating the rights of individuals is an NDP blank policy blank, not Tory. Plank, policy plank, not Tory. Looking at this bill, what is more abhorrent, additional spying on Canadians or evidence and testimony in court without disclosing the accuser? C-44 is fundamentally un-Canadian. One would expect this from the Liberals. Number three, defense of Canadians. As today is the funeral of Corporal Nathan Cirillo, in remembering his loss, some facts of the matter should not be. Corporal Cirillo and his squad mate were both unarmed. Ken Vickers was not. Ken is still with us and still armed. Shortly thereafter, our leader of the opposition asked for armed protection. What about everyday citizens? As proven in Ottawa, within a free society, the police cannot and should not be everywhere at all times. Our neighbors to the south have realized this. All states permit concealed carry. The fact of the matter is, concealed carry reduces violence. In particular, violence against women. Apparently, it is not "quote unquote" allowed in Canada. Only in reality, it isn't. Oh, apparently, it is allowed in Canada. Only in reality, it isn't. Are you aware that there are two different forms of concealed carry of firearms in Canada? One is for armored car guards and wilderness carry, $80. The other is for citizens, not in those categories, $100. You can fill out the form and send in your $100 and get a rejection letter from the RCMP with no reason attached. People are being told that if they are given a reason, an appeal can be launched. So, no reason is given. One applicant was told that the powers that be in the RCMP don't want anyone carrying concealed, so none would be approved. If that is true, it's fraud to start with. Would you please advise me as to what criteria for approval is? I am going to apply, but I need to know the criteria before I spend $100. Speaking of our Red Serge wearing police, is there any update regarding the High River report? It's getting long in the tooth. There has not been any news recently. Best regards, Ross Laurie, Calgary, Alberta. And apparently Ross got a nice, warm, fuzzy form letter in return.
It's frustrating. I've sent my MP letters like this in the past, and you put your time and energy, and you get your wording right, and you work on everything. You get it just, you know, you put a lot of time and effort into it, and you send it off, and you get back a letter that they hand, you know, they give them out to kindergartners whenever they send in their little smiley face, little cartoon drawings whenever, you know, they get a visit. Like
I disagree. They would actually take the time to write a kindergartner. A kindergartner can't form an opinion on their own. If you form an opinion, you get the form letter. That's the frustrating part, Matthew. He posed direct questions that he, as a member, a taxpayer, someone who votes, he expected that person who was paid to work on his behalf to take the time to address his concerns, and they did not, and it's insulting.
It is insulting. That's their job. Public servants.
They serve the public,
and we are the
public. My salary pays you to work for me. You're not working for me. Why can't I fire your ass?
That's right. Yeah. It's frustrating. It really is. But good letter, Ross, and I encourage all of our listeners to send letters similar to this to their MPs, because it's the only way to get heard. You continue to pester them, and eventually they'll all get together and they'll all compare notes and, oh my goodness, we're all getting the same letters about the same ideas. Okay, maybe this is what the people want us to do. At least that's how it's supposed to work.
Right. Same as all of us a couple of weeks ago suddenly applying for ATCs.
Yeah, that is supposed to let them know, oh, they want this.
Yeah, but so we're not a governed population. We're a ruled population.
We really are.
All right.
Cool. All right, who wants to take the next one? Someone jump in.
All right, it says it's from John.
I'm not very good at delegating.
Yeah,
so.
All you got to do, you had a 50-50 chance. Matthew or Trevor, take the next email. You know, all you had to do is pick one. But, you know, that's cool. Just, no, you guys fight it out. Meanwhile, crickets from Trevor because he's looking at how long it is.
And I want to hear, you know, all the links read out so that the listeners know.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Capital Z, capital Q, V6, capital U, E.
let's see how this goes. It says, it's from John. It says, hello, SFR. My name is John, and I'm from Alberta.
Hi, Guns, John.
Hi, John.
Stop by. Say hi.
Yeah. Guns have long been a curiosity, but it's only recently that I've thought I might like to eventually get into shooting. So as a part of my research, I picked up your podcast. And apart from Owen, I'd like to say it's been really worth my time.
Really?
What did Owen do?
Wow. I don't even know John.
Maybe you do. And he's like, maybe he's, I don't know.
I definitely think
John doesn't like Owen. That's what I just learned.
I think there's a good reason he didn't put his last name on the email.
There might be. Huh. All right, maybe John, follow-up letter explaining what's wrong with Owen? I don't know. It's up to you. Well, let's continue on with your email. Maybe all will become clear later. Who knows? After the recent rendezvous with Recreation that was the annual Halloween episode of Slamfire Radio, I thought that I might have something worth contending regarding the SKS rifles, which, as far as I can tell, represent the best value
I'm out. I heard SKS. I'm out. I'll be getting it. I'm going to go get a coffee.
Which represent the best value in semi-auto centerfire rifles for Canadians. Although the surplus, often armory refurbished weapons appear to have some undesirable fluctuations in performance, the latent capabilities of the platform are often compared to the Kalashnikov-based platforms in terms of accuracy and durability. Further, The typical gripes to be had, as in the trigger pull, accuracy, mounting, don't seem to be insurmountable either. And he has a link demonstrating that some of these things can be done. Some have even machined AR-styled magwells. One business in the U.S. sells them for $225 before shipping. And there appears to be a man in Montreal doing so as well. My guess is if it fits LAR mags, it might fit Beowulf ones too. I'm going to interrupt here real quick, John, as I normally do. The SKS is a 7.62x39 calibered rifle, and the LAR mags hold 2.23.
You can get LAR 7.62x39 mags as well.
Oh, you can. Very yep. good. Okay, then.
Yeah, so, we had Burns had that conversion on his CZ-A58. Because there is an LAR pistol in 7.62x39.
Very good. The other option you might look at would be the Alexander... No, what am I thinking of? The XCR pistols.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they also have a 7.6... XCR pistol mags.
And that's the mag they run. They run the LAR 10 rounder.
Oh, that is an LAR mag.
Yeah.
No, it's not an LAR. It's an XCR.
Okay, so there's LARs and XCRs that run...
The XCR pistol... In 7.62 was taking the LAR mag.
Nope. They have their own magazine.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Yep. Okay. I mean, they look identical, but they say XCR pistol mag on the side of them. I have some here. Actually, I think I got one right here. Yes, look at that.
So it says XCR and then at 7.62x39.
It says model XCR pistol magazine. And then it says the caliber, 10 round capacity.
Maybe I'm confused. Maybe there is no LAR 10 round 7.62. Maybe it's XCR, or maybe there's both. But maybe interesting. Okay.
Either way, running a 10 round pistol mag in your rifle in an SKS is definitely something that's desirable for sure.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to continue on with his email now. He says, naturally, the upgrades are expensive, and modifying the trigger group may be a little more effort than some would be comfortable with. But at less than $200 per rifle, and around $250 for an adapter, around $100 for a Tapco stock, $80 for tech sights, and another $10 for a Wolfspring, you come in at under $650. There are also increasingly more quality scope mounting options available, including the all-Canadian model by Adley Precision. In comparison, a new VZ 58 seems to be around $950 before any further upgrades, which seems to skew the pricier side. This mount looks great, but it's over double the price and not homegrown for what it's worth. And he has a link to a Zoll VZ 58 receiver cover optic mount. Conversely, the metal magazine adapter available from Wolverine Supplies is backwards compatible with regular mags and only costs $170. Nevertheless, it looks like a fully tricked out SKS might be about half what a similar VZ 58 setup could be for, with more or less the same performance. Anyway, I'm not sure if it's spot on, but it sure looks good on paper. Thanks for the fun podcast and fanning the flame, so to speak. All the best, Ron Burgundy, with a line strike through it, because he's not really Ron Burgundy.
That's right.
He's John. But, you know, the SKS is an interesting rifle. I don't have any sort of draw to it because I live where I live in New Brunswick and we have caliber restriction laws. We're not allowed to hunt with anything bigger than 2.23 around here. So it doesn't really make sense.
For one yearly.
Yearly, right. We can hunt with bigger calibers, of course, for bear, deer, and moose, but not for small game, which is what I'm generally out after. So it doesn't really make sense for me to have a rifle like that. I like to have my rifles with me year-round, or at least available to me year-round. So, but for the rest of Canada, most of the rest of Canada anyway, it is a very inexpensive center-fire semi-automatic rifle. And you're right. You get some of those adapters and some of those aftermarket parts, and all of a sudden you're looking at a pretty competent little rifle that, you know, can do a lot of things.
I think you're looking at lipstick on a pig, but that's my opinion.
And that's an interesting opinion. Now, I think the difference here would be that the SKS has been around for a very long time, and a lot of the accessories for it have been around for a long time too, which means that they probably do work well together.
To counter that, I will say the 1911 has been around for a very long time, and so have the accessories. Need I say more?
You need not say more. But I don't want to discourage anybody from getting an SKS, because they are cool little guns. Owen has one. I've played with it a little bit. I've shot other people's SKSs. They are fun. 7.62x39 is a great caliber. It's a lot of fun to play with, and it is a potent hunting caliber too. So
it is. I'm sure hundreds of deer have been taken in Canada with an SKS.
Sure. I would say so, but anyway, yeah, all the best in getting your perfect SKS tricked out there, Ron Burgundy / John, and let us know. Fill us in on when you get your license and when you get your first rifle and how the build goes, and of course, please let us know what's wrong with Owen so we can fire him if we have to.
Yeah, if we get enough.
You can't fire me, I quit.
There you go. All right, my turn?
Yep.
Now, this one is from Derica. I mean, it's spelled D-E-R-E-K-A. So
Derica?
Derica?
Is it a is it a girl? Are we confusing another guy with a girl's name as a girl like we do with Jasmine?
I'm just going to go with...
I hope so, because that wasn't awkward at all.
Derica?
I'm glad so I wasn't around for that.
Is Derica the female version of Derek?
It could be Derek with... A as the, maybe he forgot to capitalize the A as in the last initial. Maybe his last name was like Adams. Derek Adams. You didn't want to.
No. Because he just can't. He's just Canadian. He's just Derek, eh?
Derek, eh?
That would be Derek, in this case. All right.
Derek, you're going to have to write back and let us know what's
please.
Going on with your name there, man, or lady.
Derek says, "Hi, guys. Love the show. Couple of questions I'm hoping you can help me with. In one of your recent shows, it was mentioned that Matthew has a takedown 22 rifle. What kind does he have, and to how does it stack up?"
Okay. I don't think the two is supposed to be there.
And two is really fun. Let me just take that two out of there.
Yeah, take it out.
This is why we need to edit these sometimes. What does he have, and how does it stack up to? That's where the two belongs. How does it stack up to when compared to a Ruger, Henry, and Norinco takedown models in terms of ease of takedown, accuracy, and reliability? Second, Owen recently talked about getting a bear with his this year using his M305. I've been seriously considering an M305 as it is one of the few 308s on the market that actually has iron sights. Does he have a M305 shorty or long barrel, and how does he like it? What do you guys think of the M305? I've heard there were a lot of issues and problems with the short-barreled versions, but due to weight, I think the shorter barrel is the way to go. I appreciate any of your thoughts or information you can provide. Thanks, guys. Again, love the show, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, there's two smiley faces. There's two smiley faces. She called us guys. I'm thinking this is a girl.
The other thing,
I'm giving no opinion.
No.
So, Matthew.
Hi, can I talk?
Yeah, go.
No, Matthew first, because the question was first directed to Matthew.
Well, I just want to kind of laugh and at how we are referred to in the third person. Like, this person is not actually talking to us. They're about us to somebody else.
Maybe if the email is to Trevor.
Well, that could be. That would make sense because he's not actually named.
That's right.
Or maybe this person just realized he has nothing to add.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, valuable time that could be spent answering Derica's email.
It's Derica. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, Derica.
Okay. So let's start with Takedown 22. I have a Marlin 70 stainless steel papoose. And how does it stack up when compared to the others? I can tell you for sure how it stacks up compared to the Henry, because I used to have one of the Henry ones. Heads and shoulders above. The Henry is a neat little gun. You'll find that in terms of accuracy and reliability, the Marlin is going to win. In terms of storage and the fact that it floats, the Henry is going to win. But that's really all it has going for it. The Ruger...
Can I make a 10-22? Oh, you go ahead.
Yep, I haven't... I've handled a Ruger 10-22 takedown, but I haven't fired one.
I
haven't heard bad things about them. They are fairly compact, and the really nice thing about them is when you do put them together, you have a full-size stock as opposed to the Marlin. It's a sort of a short stock with the barrel sticking out past it. So
yeah, see, essentially, if I may, Matthew, the Model 70 Papoose is not a takedown version of the 795. It's its own takedown rifle. Where the Ruger 1022 is, in fact, a takedown version of the 1022. And when assembled, you have to look close at the rifle to realize that it's not the same as a regular 1022.
Exactly. Yeah. The Ruger is a little bit heavier, but that's about it. You're going to probably get very similar. Well, accuracy, I don't know. I know traditionally the Marlins have been more accurate than the Rugers, but I have heard really good things about the Ruger's accuracy as of late. Apparently they've kind of cleaned that up a little bit. So maybe the Ruger is now pulling off decent accuracy. So I would consider the Ruger if you're looking for something that has a full-size stock. The Norinco, I can only assume you're referring to the Browning clone. And I've handled the Browning. I've never handled the Norinco version of it, but I do know that the Browning takedown rifle is sweet. It is a very, very nice working, very accurate. And again, it's very similar to the Ruger, where when you put it together, it looks like a regular full-size rifle, but the fore end and the barrel comes off together so that you can stow them in a tote or a carry bag or whatever. So, yeah. I hope that helps. I hope you pick one of those up, because aside from the Henry, any of those would be a really good choice.
Oh, and 305 questions.
Yes. How do I like it? I do have the Shorty. And apparently he does like it. Owen does.
Owen does, yeah.
Yes.
You're going to talk to yourself in the third person, too.
That's right. Well, it just seems appropriate. No, I really like it. Now, of course, I've modded it all up. As we talked about earlier, it shoots really well. So, yeah, I don't really know what else to say, but I've not had any issues with it as far as even, you know, accuracy or reliability. It's fed everything that I've put into it so far. Mind you, I've not put a lot of weird stuff or any surplus. It's all been factory.
Have you put any 12 gauge through
modes.
It yet?
Haven't tried any 12 gauge through it.
Okay, well, see, I bet you that'll jam.
That
I'm
probably will jam.
Yeah.
I have a comment about the question about the iron sights. The way the question was worded, it says, I've been seriously considering an M305 as it is one of the few 308s on the market that actually has iron sights. I'm thinking maybe that the author here was referring to semi-automatic 308s, because you can still buy different models of Savages and Remington 700s that are bolt action that have iron sights.
That's true.
So, but as far as a semi-automatic 308 with iron sights, that's true. There's not a lot that come to mind, but a Ruger Scout rifle maybe?
That's also bolt action.
Oh, what's the Ruger?
The Mini 30. It's a 7.62x39.
Mini 30, okay.
Yeah.
Don't they have a semi-auto 7.62x51?
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I don't. But yeah, no, if you're looking for something with iron sights, that's cool. I like people who know how to shoot iron sights.
As far as issues go, I don't know if you boys remember this, but back in my Canadian Reload Radio days, I had ordered one because I wanted to go to the clinic with Hungary that Filthy was organizing. And the order actually had been canceled or sent back because some of them, the barrels were blowing up, and
right.
This was told to me by the dealer at the time. So there was one bad batch that had come in, but for the most part, we hear, other than some finishing work and some accurizing, they're great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I love mine. All right, this next one comes from Uncle Biscuit. hey, guys, I heard you guys discussing shotguns on episode 40. I just recently purchased.
That says 80. That totally.
Oh,
says
sorry.
80.
On 80. Yeah. Totally my bad. I don't know what I was thinking. Half of 80 is 40.
That's right.
Come on.
And a shotgun is half a weapon.
There you go. Yep. Kind of is.
Okay. So he says, I just recently purchased a Daria shotgun.
A Daria. I dare you to buy that shotgun.
A Daria. Yeah. Daria. Probably. Yeah.
No,
probably what
it's
it was.
Turkey.
made in Turkey, and was blown away by the quality. semi-auto chrome-lined 28-inch vent rib barrel with FO front bead.
Fiber
FO,
optic.
FO fiber optic front bead. Really nice furniture and finish. And all for the low price of $399. It even came with a with five chokes in a nice case. My buddy also bought a tactical version with a shorter barrel, pistol grip, and adjustable stock for $299. Maybe check one out if you get a chance. Dalask Arms in Delta carries them. Signed Uncle Biscuit. P.S. Sorry for punctuation. I'm writing this on my iPhone, and I totally smashed the blank out of it the other day, and it's hard to see anything. He did pretty well, actually. Probably better than many emails we get.
Many, yes. I want to comment on the fact that his gun was bought, or sorry, made in Turkey. Earlier in the show, we talked about my gun that I got recently, and it was made in Turkey. And they know how to make guns over in Turkey. Apparently, they're inexpensive, but I wouldn't exactly call them cheap. There are some that are cheap, and it's kind of like Norinco. You got to be careful. Some Norinco products are way better than others, and I'm sure some shotguns from Turkey are way better than others. But it sounds like you got some good ones, I think. And go ahead, Trevor. You keep
the Hatson that I had at one time. There was nothing wrong with it. It was a great gun. I liked it.
Is the Escort from Turkey?
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that's a lesser one of the Turkey shotguns. But it's funny, Matthew, because on Modern Rifleman Radio this week, the boys had George Hill, on to discuss shotguns. And when he was talking about purchasing a shotgun, he made a point of saying he wouldn't buy one made in Turkey.
Right. Well, yeah, and you know, it is sort of a new, and I don't know how new it is. I've only heard of it the last couple of years that, you know, you get shotguns out of Turkey. You know, so it's untested. You know, they're not American made. They don't have, you know, years of tradition behind
them. Or Italian made.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're on a budget, I would say look into it because you could probably get a good one for not a lot of money. On the other hand, you can also get some good American made shotguns that have a good reputation for reliability without a lot of money either. So, you know,
and you can choose, but,
and you could do worse. You could get a 780.
Yeah. All right.
Brutal. Thanks for writing in, Uncle Biscuit, and next time don't forget the gravy.
Do I have the next one?
Oh, sure, go for it.
I
Why
think
not?
It's Matt's turn, but
go ahead, Trevor.
Oh, right.
I know you're looking at the one after and freaking out, so.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll take this one. Hello, Slamfire. I enjoy the show and appreciate the time that the three of you must put into the show. I recently picked up an Axis 223 for Wile E. Coyote. Wondering if Matt would share his load recipe. Also, optics recommendations would be great. Please don't read my last name on air. Thanks, Ryan.
Smith. Oh! It's not Smith. I'm just kidding. I can share that with you. And as I preface this every time, what I use in my gun does not necessarily mean you should use it in your gun, but I'll share my recipe and assume zero liability for anybody who uses the same recipe and blows himself up. I load my 223s in Winchester brass. I use 24 grains of Varget. I load to an overall length of 2.4 inches, I think. Something like that. Anyway, everything all kind of lines up with 2 and 4, which is really nice. I get 26 or 2700 feet per second out of that. Very, very accurate. 24 grains of Varget seems to be, it's kind of a magic load for 223. Seems to work really well. So that's probably where I'd start if I were you.
Yeah, you know what? The load I had worked up for my AR was very similar to that.
Mm. Yeah, no, it worked good. One of the secrets that I think, and it's not really a secret, but one of the things that I do that I really, really do believe helps with the accuracy is I use a Lee factory crimp die. And a lot of people put a lot of clout behind that. A lot of people speak very highly of it, and I'm another one. I find it works very well. The science and the way it's explained to me and how it works makes sense. So that would be something I'd look into if you're going to be reloading, is look for that factory crimp die from Lee. Also, like you said, optic recommendations. Depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for just a typical, you know, very good general purpose scope, I'd recommend a 3-9x40-ish. Vortex makes very good scopes. If you're looking for something in sort of the middle of the road, as in terms of price, Burris is they're obviously a sort of higher middle road option, and then of course Leupold is sort of the higher end.
Somewhere in between the Burris and the Leupold, I've got the Bushnell Elite 3-9x40 on my 223 Coyote gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's somewhere in between those two again.
Do your research on your scope and don't cheap out on it. I know you didn't pay a lot for your Axis, and I know that because I didn't pay a lot for my Axis. Axises are not expensive. Axises or Axi? I'm not sure. But don't cheap out in your scope. Just because it's a cheap rifle, your scope is what delivers your accuracy. You need to be able to see clearly. You need to make sure that it's going to hold at zero, and you need to make sure that it's rugged and reliable. So do your research on your scope. Spend the extra money and get a good set of glass, and that will really improve your shooting experience. So, anybody else want to add to that?
I just concur. I mean, invest your money in your glass. Yep. You won't be sorry.
Thanks, Mr. Smith. I mean, Ryan. Just kidding.
All right, so, Matt, you want to continue on here?
Yes, from Dave. Oh, this is talking about the safety courses that he actually sent this in quite a while ago. We had a discussion about the inconsistencies between the safe firearm safety courses from province to province. And
discrepancies of price, why we pay less and other people pay more, etc.
Sure. Okay, we'll go with that, and I'm going to read the email. The administration of the safety courses and their pricing is very different from province to province. In some places, the courses are run out of community college facilities. Instructors are provided all of the guns and materials needed to run a course, and the student bookings are done through the hosting facility. In such cases, the instructors don't have overhead to worry about, and the time to do a course is little more than the time spent in the classroom. In a couple of provinces, the cost of doing the course and test is mandated to be the same, just as challenging the test. While there may be provincial organizations for instructors, the standards in each province for pricing and hours of instruction are basically set, approved, dictated by the provincial CFO. In provinces, for example, Ontario, where instructors have to run and administer the course themselves, they have to buy all of their own guns and training materials, typically spend as long or longer dealing with prospective students as they do actually teaching a course. They have to buy their own manuals and exams, and if they're renting a space set up in an urban hotel, spend upwards of $1,000 on that for a weekend. So that really explains why some of the pricing is different from province to province for sure. The quality of instruction varies widely. My heart goes out to people who have a quote-unquote instructor who just reads the book or the slides. It's going to be a painful course. I've had many students from a variety of professions tell me that the and the CRFSC, so Canadian Firearm Safety Course and Canadian Restricted Firearm Safety Course, was one of the best courses they've ever done in any setting. You're not going to get those kind of comments if you are reading the students to sleep. Where there is a choice of instructors, shop around and find someone who actually teaches and enjoys teaching. In Ontario, the maximum instructor to student ratio is 10-1 unless the instructor adds extra hours to the course for more gun handling. I hear stories of some courses that are the firearms equivalent, training equivalent of a puppy mill. For the Canadian Firearms Safety Course in Ontario, the FSESO policy is for 10 hours of instruction, which should give every student time to handle each firearm action about 6 times. The Canadian Restricted Firearm Safety Course, when taught back-to-back with the Canadian Firearm Safety Course, is another 6 hours. You want instructors who are actually going to supervise the gun handling and make sure everyone's doing it properly, not sit back and read the paper while a gaggle of students fend for themselves at a table full of guns. Yeah, that would suck. He continues on, I've heard some people express the view that these courses should be taught by volunteers out of a love for the shooting sports. The reality of class composition is that a lot of people doing the courses in urban areas are only doing so because they need it for the Canadian Border Services Agency or a security job. If someone wants to give up their weekends for free to help a few people become shooters, and many people apply for the Canadian Border Services Agency and Brinks jobs, all they need to do is get certified, geared up, and hope their significant other is very understanding. I take the 1-3 or 2-3, I take a third to two-thirds of the class who are indifferent or anti-gun as a challenge. The vast majority of them are going to be much more positive towards firearms by the time they're finished a well-taught course. And that comes to us from Dave Bartlett. So, good insight there, Dave. And it sounds like you're a good instructor, and thank you for being a good instructor, and please carry on.
I'd take a class from anybody who can write an email like that at any time.
Sure.
Very well explained, very well thought out, and yep. Kind of all I can say is now we know. Thank you.
Now we know.
All right. Well, this next one comes to us from Mark Price, who says, hi, Partridge. Oops. Sorry, that was another email.
Mark, I'm telling you, man. You and me, we're going to have words. You're going to say partridge, 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 and I'm going to say grouse, grouse, grouse.
I was going to say it's one of those words, grouse.
Yeah, one of those words is grouse.
He goes on to say, you guys always talk about your Glocks as your go-to handgun when it comes to the end of the world, the apocalypse, Armageddon, when Trevor buys a wooden AR, etc.
I'm not so sure anymore, as you can tell by from my review earlier.
Let's look at some of the possible downsides to such a choice. Okay, there's nothing left in this email. There's
there
no downsides.
Go. There are no possible downsides. Very good. Carry on.
Yeah. He said, I assume that with the poor chamber support for cartridges, that you wouldn't be able to reload as many times.
Slow down, also, Oz. Poor?
Yeah.
Not fully supported doesn't mean poor.
That's right.
Man, what's with the hate?
He goes on to say, once you run out of your stock FMJ bullets, I assume you would be looking for cast bullets out of lead, which is certainly not a friend to the Glock. How are you supposed to lend me ammo when your filthy, unresized Glock cartridges keep getting stuck in my K100? Cough, Owen. Yeah, I tried to loan him some ammo one time at the range, and yeah, that didn't work out so good. Are the above items overstated by Glock haters, or is it a genuine concern? Squirrel, if you have a light primer strike during an IPSC match and you have an awesome double-action, single-action gun, are you allowed to just pull the trigger again and hope for the best, or should you just cut your odds and rack the slide for a new round? Last week's episode was great. Officer Frank did a good job on emphasizing how things can change from second to second on what could be done. I could see how situational awareness that you guys are always talking about could give you that possible few extra seconds to make that critical choice. This is Mark Price, who says, P.S., if I shoot a grouse in a pear tree, should I call it a partridge?
You can call it whatever you want. I'm going to call it stew. You are allowed to just pull the trigger again in IPSC if you have a light primer strike. That's fine. That's probably not your best course of action, though, because you shouldn't train for things like that. You should just... You get a click, you should tap rack.
I concur.
That being said, if you know that your gun is prone to light primer strikes or you have
a
bad batch of ammo, yeah, get a new gun. But if you have to fight through a match with what you've got...
Yes, you're good to go.
Yeah, I saw that recently, actually. Somebody had... who was that? Was that Luke? Yeah, it was Luke. Yeah, he'd click and then pull the trigger again and bang most of the time.
And the second one, you notice he always flinched a little less.
A little less, yeah. As for your concerns with the Glock, here's the thing about sharing ammo is I'm not going to, so I don't have to worry about that. And as for using cast bullets, that's a good point. I never thought about that.
It's a good point, but think about this. It's a good point, but... At that point, does it really matter? Are you really that worried about it if you're that desperate that you're casting your own bullets?
I think you could just clean out your barrel every now and then.
That's it. Just clean your barrel more often.
Yeah.
And by more often, I mean start cleaning it, because don't clean them now.
Yeah, you don't need to clean them with regular Full Metal Jacket. But yeah, with lead, you'd have to clean them for sure. But yeah, no, I never even thought of that. Thanks for bringing that up, and thanks for making sure that I had a good answer for next time you tried.
What was his other concern? There was the lead?
The cartridge, poor chamber support.
Oh, poor chamber support. Yeah, well, if you've got a decent resizing die, it takes the bulge out of the 9mm. It really is more an issue in the 40 because the 40 is a high pressure case more so than the 9mm. So you get what they refer to as Glock brass or Glock bulged brass. And in 9mm, it's not been a problem for me to resize it in a regular resizing die. However, in a 40, if you don't remove that bulge, what happens is when you resize it in a regular resizing die, it creates a crease at the bottom of the case and makes the case completely useless and won't chamber in anything, even a Glock, if the crease is really significant, which oftentimes it is. So you get what's called a undersized die. Evolution Gunworks makes them, and if you're running a Glock and you run a Evolution undersized die, when you resize that ammo, it's good for any gun, which is important if you're running multiple platforms. You don't want to have ammo just for the Glock and ammo for your CZ and Tanfoglio.
Or you could just always just have a Glock.
Yeah. Just have more Glocks.
Trevor makes a lot of sense.
Sometimes.
Don't tell him that too much. He'll get puffed up. His head will start expanding even more.
What do we got next?
All right. This is from Describla.
Whose turn is it?
It's mine.
Oh.
That's why I started. Is it mine? No, I just read the last one.
You just read the last one.
Oh, yeah. See?
All right. I got Describla, and then you got turn. Manny.
I guess I'll get Manny, yeah. Go ahead with the Scribbler.
Hi, guys. Love the show. I'm rather new to firearm sports. That being said, I grew up in the north around firearms and did a lot of hunting and trapping, but although I grew up with it, I was never really all that into it.
That tends to happen. If it's something that's your life from the get-go, it's just, it's another tool. And that's the thing. Guns are just another tool.
Yeah, so farmers don't suddenly start hobby farms.
No.
Eventually, I moved down south, got caught up in city life, and drifted away from firearms altogether. Fast forward 30 years, and I now find myself getting back into firearms and quite enjoying it, but with my schedule, I don't get much trigger time. Hey, a rock. Look, a squirrel. Aw, isn't it cute? Oops, I'm sorry. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, firearms. Anyway, I went back and listened to some Canadian Reload radio from November 2010, and Matthew was talking about how he keeps track of all of his firearms information, such as serial numbers, purchase prices, using Excel spreadsheets. I thought this was brilliant. That's right. I said brilliant. Matthew, put down the squirrel and pay attention here.
Oh, hey, sorry. Here I am. I'm back.
That's better. Now, just reading this email, your co-hosts have just told the entire Slamfire audience that you're brilliant. To really enjoy this, I think you should make Trevor read it.
That darn squirrel.
Where was I? I thought this was a great idea. But keeping track of your firearm serial numbers, purchase costs, and other... by keeping track of your firearm serial numbers, purchase costs, and other data in spreadsheets allows you to easily store the data on a flash drive that can be safely kept in a fireproof safe or safety deposit box. So in the event of a break-in or your house fire, the data is easily available for the RCMP and insurance purposes. I also keep mine on an online server, so I've never actually put it on a disk or anything. It's just... it's on a server. It's a province of New Brunswick server, but whatever. It's online. You can email it to yourself in a Hotmail or Gmail account.
There's all kinds of ways to do that, yeah.
I thought this would be a great idea to pass on to the Slamfire audience and perhaps have Matthew talk about how he sets up his spreadsheets, what data he keeps in them, and whether or not he still does this. Again, guys, love the show. Keep up the great work. And remember, hug your squirrels. I'm a rock. Yours sincerely, the Scribbler in Manitoba.
That was a good email. That was awesome.
So are you still doing that?
I am, yes. I use Google Excel on the Google Drive, so that means that as long as I can log on to the internet, I always have access to it. And every now and then, I print it off and just so I have a hard copy in the house. But, you know, if the house burns down, then I don't have that anymore. And then if the internet went down, then I'd have the hard copy that's in the house. So as long as the internet doesn't go down and my house burned down on the same day, I should be all right. But, I keep track of the make, model, serial number, the date that I purchased it, the date that I sold it, if I've sold it yet. And then I keep track of how much I paid for it after taxes and shipping. So my cost, and then what I sell them for if I sell them.
And that's awesome.
And the really cool thing about using an Excel sheet is that you can put in formulas that keep track of your current purchases, keep track of how much you've spent on your hobby, you know, and so on and so forth. I'm happy to report that aside from the current firearms that I own, if you look at just my history of firearms that I've owned in the past, which is over 50, by the way, I am at plus $600 so far. I've made $600 in this hobby if you don't count what I currently own.
Nice. So. I do something similar, but I need to get a copy. I need to see yours and transfer my data into yours because what I have is just a simple Word file and I have all the handguns, all the rifles, and, all the shotguns. I'm at a total of 45, so I'm catching up to you.
Nice.
And I have been doing this quite as long as you, so.
I figured you'd be past me by now, actually, so that's interesting.
But I have make, model, serial number. When I have the information, if I forgot, because I started this after quite a few transactions.
Right.
If I have the buyer's name and what I paid, and then I have the person I sold it to and what I sold it for.
Yeah, I didn't keep track of the people, and that might have been a good idea for me to do, and maybe I'll start doing that. I never even thought of that. The other thing is, you said you have yours listed by category. Mm-hmm. What I do is I color code mine. So I have them listed alphabetically, by maker, and then I just color code. My restricteds are red, my antiques are green, my non-restricteds are, black, you know, and
you're at 50?
50-ish. I can't remember. It's like 52 or 3.
You guys have way too much time on your hands.
I'm going to take a guess, and I'm going to say that of your 50, the most common firearm there would be rimfire rifles.
You got it.
Yeah. Now, guess what out of my 45, have I bought more shotguns, more pistols, or more rifles? What do you think?
Pistols.
Rifles.
Yeah.
One of us is right. Owen said pistols.
I thought he said, I'll have to get back to you guys on that because the way I have it ordered, I have like 16 pistols. Okay, well, who could do quick mental math?
I can't, but go for it.
17 to 37. So what's that?
Adding it onto it? 54.
No. If between 17 and 37.
Oh, between, so 37 minus 17, so 20.
20, so there you go, 20 rifles.
Okay, yeah.
16 pistols and 20 rifles.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, rifles is definitely my highest, and rimfire rifles is obviously the highest. I've got just many different iterations and models that I've used to own, but anyway. Yeah, no, it is a really good way to just kind of keep track of what you've got. And what you've had, and what you've had isn't really important. It's just more for curiosity's sake and just to kind of remember what you used to have.
Yeah.
A few times I've looked at guns going, oh, I should buy that. And then I go through I did used to own that. All right. Yeah. I remember why I didn't like that. And then I don't get it. So.
And you said we have way too much time. I don't know if you've done this, Matthew, but I've also kept records of my firearms modification lists. And I update it every couple of months. So if I open up a firearms modification list from a couple of years ago, it'll have the work I did to my Kel-Tex, let's say. It'll have all the accessories and add-ons I did to the Sub 2000. So every time I have I buy a new firearm, I throw it on that list. And then every time I do something to it, add an EOTech, add a Magpul stock, I have a list of the accessories and work I've done to the gun. And then that kind of gives me an idea when it comes time to sell it, what I've put into it.
Right.
Then I have another list of accessories and modifications that I want to do to my guns.
Right.
And that's basically a shopping list. So, for example, real quick, I would have my Glock 17 Gen 3 on there, and I've got listed night sights, extended magazine release. My M&P I'd have on there, Apex trigger kit, night sights. Every gun I have that I haven't completely modified yet is on that list. And then, of course, there's a TAC 21 build, which is 13 pages of...
The good things to keep track of, I mean, especially when you have memories like I do and like Trevor does, and I don't know how long's memory is, but mine's terrible.
And you are?
Yeah, no idea.
All right, you got Manny?
Oh, that's right, that's me. All right, from Manny from Winnipeg. Hello, all. My question originates from Canada's ATC laws. Some are used for work and others of protection of one's life. My question is about the latter. If you were in a situation where you had to use your gun to defend your life, would that person with the ATC answer to the same charges that someone without one have to face if they used a gun in self-defense? Now, since this person has no formal training like police or military, who's to say that in the event of a shooting, they only get covered for the pesky unsafe storage law, not any other crime they allegedly committed? I also have a second question. There seems to be some cloudiness on the subject of whether you can put a stock on a pistol in Canada. In the States, it's a big no-no, and I don't know the particulars, but here in Canada, nothing has given me a straight answer. I went to Wolverine over the summer and remember seeing a pistol with a stock on it. Didn't think about it then. Thank you, gentlemen. Manny from Winnipeg. Let's start with the first question.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you have an ATC and you use it to defend yourself, and then you have the exact same situation where somebody without an ATC used a gun to defend themselves, I think the police are going to look at you with the same charges in mind, no matter what permits you may or may not have, with the exception that if you don't have an ATC and you're out in public and use a gun to defend yourself, you may get concealed carry charges brought up against you as well.
And Manny, I'm not sure if you've actually seen the application for ATC, not the wilderness carry and not the armored guard carry, but the other one. It asks on the application for you to list all the training courses you have. And you say here about, now, since this person has no formal training like police or military, we'll define formal training. Is MAG 40 formal training? I'd like to think so.
Yeah, I would think so, too. So,
there's a difference between formal training and law enforcement military training.
Yeah, so, could be.
Black badge is formal training.
Sure it is, yeah. But is it relevant to authorized to carry?
No, but it's just...
But it is formal training.
Yeah, so everybody...
I'm formally trained as a plumber.
There you go.
That's formal training.
That may be a stretch, but civilians carrying can also be trained, is my point.
Yeah. So, it's hard to say. Unfortunately, this is a situation, or this is a circumstance that we can only
hypothesize.
But if this was written before the Officer Frank episode, he probably got his answers.
Probably.
But I don't remember when we put this in. I think we would have, we were probably supposed to cover this. We were last supposed week. To cover this last week, so a lot of his questions were answered by Officer Frank. Probably.
I would hope so. For a stock on a pistol in Canada, no problem. Go
that
for
is
it.
Not. What? Doesn't make it non-restricted, though.
No, but it's not illegal. You can absolutely do it.
I said matters not. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I thought. Yeah. No. It matters not. If it's registered as a restricted pistol, it's going to stay a restricted pistol no matter what you do to it. Yeah. So, but you can put a stock on it and shoot at the range. No problem. There's all kinds of cool things you can put Glocks into little carbine kits and stuff. And if you want to shoot it at the range that way, go crazy. There's nothing stopping you.
If you put a stock on your AR pistol, that's not going to matter. But if you change the barrel on your AR pistol to an 18-inch barrel, you're supposed to notify the firearms officer, your CFO, within 30 days.
Yes, because it's changing it from a pistol to a rifle.
Well, yeah. And it's going to... Exactly.
Yeah.
Even if you change an AR 10.5-inch barrel to an 18-inch barrel, you're supposed to notify them because the length is written on your registration certificate.
Now, that's what they would prefer you to do. If you look in the actual Firearms Act, what the law actually says is that you're required to notify them if the alteration to the firearm changes the classification of the firearm. If it doesn't change the classification, you don't... According to the law, you don't need to tell them. However, provincial regulation may dictate that you still do.
Yeah.
So you still need dope. To you still need yeah. to do it.
When in doubt, call and ask. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything, right?
Yeah.
The only time it comes into question is if you have like one of those handy rifles from H&R where you can just swap the barrel out and change the caliber, and then you which one do I take hunting? Well, see, it doesn't matter anymore because we don't have their long gun registry. But when we did, a lot of people were crying about that. Mm. But anyhow,
and then it went away and nothing happened.
I know. Woohoo!
All right, one more.
One more.
Yeah. So this last one comes from Jeff. Says, hey, I am looking for scope mount recommendations. I'm thinking of getting a Leupold FX1 rimfire 4x28mm on my 1022. The 1022 has a built-in Picatinny rail and not that crappy Ruger rail. I would like a quick detach mount that I could put the scope on there, but take it off and ideally not have to have it drift too far from where it was zeroed. Do you have any recommendations?
Do you want to know what's funny? This was a Facebook message to me, and I glanced at it really quick, and I asked him, do you mind if we talk about this on the show? And then I started to answer him anyway, and only now that it was read to me, did I realize that it said scope mount recommendations.
So you've been answering him about what different scopes he should get.
Yes, because I am a numpty.
So
this is why I brought it to the show, Jeff, because I am incompetent. Burris, the plep mount, Burris plep. That's my recommendation.
I'm with Trevor because I did not look into this.
Or LaRue Tactical.
Again,
but
I'm
with
Trevor.
You're going to pay big money for a LaRue Tactical detachable scope mount.
Well, if he's putting a Leupold on it,
go LaRue. I mean,
to put a Leupold on a 1022, you know.
Nothing wrong with that.
That seems like pretty, I mean, I don't know a lot about scopes, but that seems like a pretty high end. Usually when you see Leupold, that's pretty high end. So
yeah, Jeff's opinion is buy once and don't have buyer's remorse.
Right.
So why did he buy a 1022?
Because it's a great firearm.
Ah, you're funny. Did you know that the 1022's name comes from the fact that you can kill 22 people with 10 rounds?
Yep.
Yes, that's
I read that. I saw that in a graphic.
I saw it on a graphic on Facebook, so it's got to be true.
Got to be true. I thought it was 10 people every 22 seconds.
Oh, maybe it's that too. Maybe it's both.
It was listed
as that's the SK, lethal that's the firearms SKS round. Or something. That's the SKS round.
Yeah.
Oh, that was crazy.
So,
yeah,
silly liberals. All
go
right.
ahead and do the ending of the show now.
Yeah.
Bill, this is what when we
is,
do it.
It is
yes.
the end of the show.
At
so
the
I
end
guess...
of the show is usually when we do the ending, yes. Yeah.
All right, then I want to end the show.
Okay, well, we have no iTunes review written down here, so I'm not going to read anything that we don't have written down. And shout-outs. You guys have some shout-outs? Because I don't recognize any of these.
Apparently,
I got several written there.
Yeah.
The first one is to Ed. Thanks for the bullseye. And there's a big inside joke there between Ed and a listener, I guess. I don't know. I was just told to give that shout-out, so there, I did my job. Manny, sorry. To Christine, congrats on your new 22 AR build. Write us and tell us all about it when it's finished and send in pictures. She's doing the same thing I'm trying to do, only she started with you know what? I'm going to let her tell it. To the Mad Ogre, stop making excuses. To Big Sexy, you're too good to listen to us, so I can say basically whatever I want, but be warned, you're going to fall just like the ogre. And to Kevin, thanks for those awesome 38 Smith & Wesson bullets. They are a wonderful addition to my collection. I appreciate it very much.
Cool.
All anybody right. else?
I'm good. Oh, well, I'll re-shout out Martin from Corwin Arms. He, well, you heard all about it earlier in the show, so I'm not going to say it again, but Martin, you the man.
All right. And be sure to join both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA. Check us out on Gunners of Canada. Like us on Facebook. And check out the other shows on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. And that at this point, in this juncture of the evening, brings us to the end of the show.
Very good. Thank you for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Take somebody shooting.
Especially if their name is Ron Burgundy.
Take Ron Burgundy shooting. Take me shooting!
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time.
time to get a gun.
No, I know Filthy doesn't really like me because I'm a Jedi.
Oh, well, who's that, rebel scum?
Let's start this show already.
Yes, I need to get this over with. I have things to do. Candy to eat.
Candy to eat.
Boobies to watch.
Boobies to watch?
I heard boobies. Did you hear boobies?
Yes.